Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable!
Mayweather makes a pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact, I'm the best, you know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
A crime-fighting cup man, Mike Rodriguez, returns to the Last Round Podcast. He's a homicide detective who now supervises the missing persons unit with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, and he's also a professional cup man. As a boxing fan, especially our listeners, you know you've seen him on your television screens or on your mobile phones or on your iPads, on your tablets, your computer screens. He's been all over the place, ranging from Manny Pacquiao to Yordanis Ugas, to Errol Spence, to recently, to probably one of the biggest wins of his career in Dimitri Bivol's corner this past weekend against Canelo Alvarez in Las Vegas, Nevada. Mike Rodriguez returns to the Last Round. Welcome back, Mike.
What's up, fellas? And I got to say, you guys are kind of good luck because this is my third time on the show. The first time is when J-Rock Julian Williams beat Jared Hurd. I talked to you the following Monday when Pacquiao beat Keith Thurman. I talked to you the following Monday. It was already scheduled. We had scheduled this for Monday. And Dimitri Bivol beats the consensus pound for pound in a great fighter in a Canelo Alvarez.
Man, I hope this winning streak stays alive, man. You know, as soon as it snaps, I hope you don't get away from us.
Mark Magsayo makes his next defense in San Antonio in July. Against Ray Vargas. Maybe we'll schedule something on that right. Friday before.
Hey, you know we're in it, man. We're right here with you. So as we mentioned, you were obviously the cut man for Dimitri Bivol, who retained his WBA 175-pound light heavyweight title this past weekend in Las Vegas. Before we kind of dive into that fight and, you know, obviously the biggest win of Bivol's career up until this point, you worked with Bivol in the past. We know that you did some interviews and you've obviously told us before that you worked with him in a fight in Russia. So was this your second fight working with Dimitri?
Yes. But, you know, we've always made it a really good relationship because he's primarily for his fights, trains in Southern California. And he's a very affable guy. He's a high character guy. We've always gotten along. Same thing with his trainer, Gennady from Russia. Obviously, he's been training out with Joel Diaz. Joel Diaz and I, and his brother Tonio, are great friends. I had worked with his management company with other fighters, with Vadim and Oleg and Alec. And then, you know, I got the call to work with him again. And they specifically said, hey, you know, Dimitri asked for you to work with him this fight. And I, you know, of course, I jumped at the chance. It's a huge fight, huge opportunity as a cut man. But most of all, it's because I think very highly of Dimitri. He's got high pedigree. He's got high character. And I really felt a lot like his team and Dimitri, that we could win this fight. And, you know, and Canelo's a great champion. I mean, he dares to be great. He is great. And nothing on him should be diminished for trying to be great and going up to 175 pounds. And I think the fandom of it all, the whole Canelo machine, will lose sight that there are other fighters out there that got pretty high pedigree too, and that are pretty great fighters. And Dimitri just happens to be one of them. And he stuck to his game plan. He stuck to his fundamentals. And you can see the guy doesn't get rattled. And he's a great champion.
What was it like during training camp? Obviously, you know, he trains out here and out there in Indio, California, the Coachella Valley. How many times were you able to actually make it out there to be a part of training camp?
Once I got the final word, you know, I never want to overstep my bounds. I'm not an ambulance chaser, man. I'm not trying to go out there and, you know, we decided he might, we want you. Then I was like, every chance I got, I made that 2-hour drive out there. Also, too, because I love Joel Diaz and Tonio Diaz, and I got to see them and spend some time with them, you know. And also, Chakram was training out there, and a few other guys. And you know, once you get that call and you know you're going to be with a team, if I'm able to, I like to get out there. And I was very impressed with Dimitri because he's a hard worker. His strength and conditioning coach, Taylor Ramsdale, is as good as anybody in the business. And they got a great, great chemistry. That's really when you put in a team together, you want to have great, great chemistry. You know, it's like your junior prom, man. You're probably not going to have that great chemistry. But hopefully by your senior year, by your senior ball, you got great chemistry. And I just think it was just a perfect storm. And sometimes when you fight a great fighter like Canelo, it brings the best out of a fighter. And I think that's what happened. And I think people now are really going to see that they had a chance to see how great of a fighter Dimitri is.
Mike, do you think that's one of the things why a lot of, you know, fighters like, you know, Joel Diaz and Antonio, because they're, you know, that comes to the serious, but the lighthearted, you know, Joel's always, you know, kind of giving them jokes, kind of giving the fighters a bit of shit.
Yeah, you know, and I know from other fighters, you know, Joel's that guy, you know, he has facilities out there where Dimitri didn't do it. He rented a house, but I know like the Figueroa brothers would come out and, you know, stay out there on his ranch and stuff. And I mean, in some Spartan conditions, but there's a method and a madness to it, you know, and Joel's right there with you, man. He's going to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, after he's done milking goats and the chickens and getting his horses together, puts in the time. He puts time. This is his passion. And most of all, aside from his passion, it's his compassion that he has for his fighters, his family, and for people. And I think aside from boxing, and Joel, I talk about this a lot. We're brothers, man, outside of boxing. When you get to know people's family, I know his kids, I know Junior's son, and you know, Junior's one of my favorite people in the whole world. Ever since he was a little boy, we've been very close. So to do things with these kind of things with people you so highly of, it's like that old saying, what's better than doing what you love than with the ones you love and care for the most? And Joel, like Freddie Roach and Steven Edwards and guys like Salas and other trainers that I work with, what's better than sharing those moments with those kind of people? I mean, there's nothing better. I've honestly been on a high on life, you know, the last 3 days.
When you were got the final word that, you know, you were going to jump on the team for this fight, what was the reaction like when you first saw Dimitri Bivol again after the last time you saw him? Like, you know, you saw him in person, whether it was in Indio or anywhere else.
Yeah, you know, he walks up to me and I'm in the parking lot, and I got there to the gym a little earlier than him, and he drove up with Taylor and the rest of the team, and he was actually driving because they had rented a house over in Indio. And when I went to my car to get something out of the truck, he stops the car before he parks. And he rolls down the window and he says, Mike, you're going to be my cut man. Yes. Absolutely, man. You know, it's just his personality, man. He just, you know, look at anything in life, man. You always want to be your best, especially when your best is needed. But I don't care what kind of business or genre or thing you do in life. It's always nice to be appreciated. And it's always nice to be wanted. And I definitely, you know, felt that way from the whole team. We had all worked together before. We had all worked together before. And like I said, I've run into Dimitri many, many times over the years. And it was always in the back of my mind that when things line up right, I hope we get to work together again. And, you know, I remember working with him in Russia, April of 2015, he was 2-0. And I was over there with wildcard fighter Dennis Lebedev for the cruiserweight champion and the management, Vadim. And I said, hey, we got another kid we think very highly of. He's probably going to be champion. We get to the arena early and work with him. I was like, absolutely. And I remember working with him then, and I just always thought very highly of him, and I still do.
Is it any different for you now, Mike, now that you've been, you know, around the boxing business for some time? Do you feel that you're more experienced and calmer in these events?
You know, I've always taken pride in that. I was a former fighter. I've been in the military. I've been a cop and a homicide detective for 34 years. I've been in a lot of high pressure situations. I've worked a lot of tough fights with some fighters that get cut a lot. Francisco Vargas, John Porter early in his career, Sergey Lipinets. You know, I've been battle tested, and I take pride in that, where not just me, the guys that you're looking at, the Stitch Durans, the Carlos Vargas, the Danny Milanos, the Mike Basils, Rudy Hernandez, that Russ Amber, that were battle tested. And for me, because of all those things that I explain in my experience, things don't speed up that 1 minute. They kind of slow down. And I kind of take pride in that, that my fighters know that obviously there's things out of your control. And you just, they just know that you're going to be able to give them the very best when your best is needed.
Mike, it's strange being a cut man, because you need something to go wrong and you need your fighter to get cut for kind of for you to shine. And I don't mean that in the way that you want the spotlight, but I mean that in a case of for you to do something, because if he doesn't get cut, you don't really do a lot for 12 rounds.
Yeah, you know, Dimitri's face held up really well, but the fight earlier with Shakhram Glavkov, he got cut in the second round, you know, on the earlier DAZN card. He's a very highly thought of prospect, former Olympian. And he got cut in the second round, and it took a couple of rounds to get it under control. So it's one of those things, guys, where you hope for the best, but you have to expect the worst. And I think, and you work a lot of big fights, there's no coincidence. The guys that I just mentioned earlier, there's no coincidence why you see the same guys working with all the big fighters. It's like there's no coincidence when you see the same 8, 9, 10 trainers working with all the top fighters. And I think it's just your reputation and that you can be counted on. And I always tell my fighters, look, no matter what happens, you just listen to your trainer. I'm going to get you through it. And, you know, God willing, and if my skills can help that, then that's exactly what I try to do.
Mike, I'm sure it's probably different for every single fighter because everyone's different. Everyone has a different personality, but you're with them, you're wrapping their hands, and you can kind of see into their eyes just before they go out at war. So like, what did you say to Bivol, and kind of give us examples of what you say to different people?
Well, Diaz wrapped his hands, and Dimitri's a pretty calm guy. He's very affable, very friendly guy. He's not wound super tight. I work with fighters, guys that are wound tight. You just know, don't even talk to them. Just leave them alone. And I tell him, hey, man, in the corner, you just breathe. You relax. Listen to your trainer. I looked at Dimitri, and I put my hand up to fist bump him, and I said, this is your night tonight. And don't let anything or anybody change that. And he just shook his head, you know. But he was pretty loose in the locker room. The hard work, you know, had already been done. And it's not his first rodeo. I mean, he has a pretty high pedigree, his amateur pedigree, pro pedigree. I mean, he's been champion for 5 years. He's been a legitimate world champion for 5 years. So, you know, he was up for the challenge. And I think too many people are trying to take away, you know, from Canelo's greatness. You know, all of a sudden now, you know, it's like, yeah, the guy's a consensus pound for pound champ, 175 pounds. Could you imagine, you know, back in the day, you know, Donald Curry or Fred Benitez going up fighting Michael Spinks or Matthew Saad Muhammad? You know what I mean? It's unheard of. And I give him all the credit in the world. He's got a great team. Eddie Reynoso is a great trainer. I saw something today where people were like, oh, he's lost two in a row. I mean, Emmanuel Stewart lost fights with Tommy Hearns and other fights. It's just asinine to me because you got all these people out there with no championship pedigree, and you know, right away they just want to kind of pop off, and that kind of bothers me because I have nothing but respect for Canelo. He's a great fighter. He was, and he is still a great fighter, and there are many things for him still to do to cement his legacy, both him as a fighter and Eddie as his trainer.
How was Bivol during those last couple of days during fight week? Is because obviously we see him in front of the camera and stuff, you know, he's a calm, very humble guy. Is he the same way when the cameras are turned off?
Yeah, absolutely, man. He's just an easy going guy. He likes to joke around, you know. The team's pretty loose, man. Everybody kind of messes with each other, you know. His trainer from Russia, Gennady, you know, it was kind of nice that I already knew him. I would see him around, and you know, whenever they train in Southern California, and like I said, with Joel and Taylor Ramsdale and his whole management team, it was just, you know, everybody knows what their job is. And I think everybody just expects to be an all-star at that position just to support Dimitri or whoever it is to give him the best chance to win. Obviously, they got to do the heavy lifting. I mean, he was in there with friggin' Canelo Alvarez, for God's sakes. And all the things that he was doing, none of us were surprised. And I think a lot of quote-unquote real boxing people, they weren't that surprised. And it was a great fight. It was a great night. It was good for boxing. And I take offense when people try to tarnish that, you know, when great fighters fight. Everybody wants great fighters to fight. And then when they do and somebody loses, you know, everybody's got an opinion about it. You know, and I just, you know, the only thing that bothered me about the whole thing is when I look back on it now as we kind of digress, is those judges had Canelo winning the first four rounds, all three of them. And can you imagine tonight that the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Celtics by 8? At the end of the night, the scoreboard, and they say, Milwaukee, you scored more points, but guess what? We're gonna let Boston win tonight. And those kind of boxing kind of bother me. And I just hope, the one question I always ask is, you know, is there any quality control? I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong, But is there any asking the question to ask people to explain themselves? Because in our regular jobs, and even as a cut man, all the guys that I mentioned, the Stitches and Danny Milanos and Russ Ambers and Mike Basils, and, you know, if we didn't stop cuts for four fights in a row, I think somebody would ask a question like, hey, what the hell is going on? And that would be my only concern. All's well that ends well. The right guy won the fight. He deserved to win the fight, and that was Dimitri. But sometimes, man, I just kind of scratch my head, and that's why boxing sometimes as a sport, we, all of us involved, we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot.
You're in the ring, Mike, after, you know, after the final bell. You're waiting for the scorecards to be read. Did you already know beforehand that he'd won?
No. And I looked at his manager, Vadim. I said, Vadim, we won that fight. We won. And he was just kind of looking at me like, and I hope the judges get it right. Because the last thing you want them judges to come in with a ski mask, duct tape, and a shotgun and rob your guy, you know.
Did you think?
I've been on the short end of a couple of those.
Oh, sorry, you kind of froze up, so I thought you stopped. But when they read the 115-113, during those moments, those few seconds before they announced the winner,
I puckered up and was I nervous, man? I was really, really nervous when they said 115-113. I thought it was more in the 16-12, 17-11 range. When I was going to listen for wider, going to say, you know what, they got it right. But when I heard 15-13, man, I had to wait. And it was kind of weird because Canelo's always the champion. So when you hear still the champion, I had to remind myself, no, this is our title. Dimitri was the defending champion. And like I said, all's well that ends well. But there was some nervous moments. And I was just a little curious about the scoring. And I think I'm not the only one that was kind of baffled by the scoring. Baffled in the sense that their eyes don't lie to them. My eyes don't lie to me, but not baffled in the sense that this is boxing and it's not like we haven't seen it before.
In terms of going back to cuts and that actual fight, obviously Dimitri's face was pretty much in pristine condition. You know, it looked like he wasn't even in a fight. The most visible battle scar he had was on his arm. Like he kept saying, he's like, oh yeah, he got me in my arm. Has there ever been in your experience doing all these cuts for all these fighters over the years up until that moment, has there ever been a cut in anywhere else other than the face that you've had to work on?
Yeah, you know, sometimes guys get cut in the ear or behind the ear. I remember Mars in the first fight with Leo Santa Cruz at Staples Center. I was with Abner Mars and he got cut in the side of his head. But the good thing is Abner had a good full of head of hair. So the hair would absorb the blood. And basically, when you come back in between the rounds, I would just kind of dry the hair off and then let the hair absorb the blood. When guys got bald heads and they get cut on the head, it's bad because, you know, it's very visible. There's nothing to absorb the blood. And around your head bleeds a lot. Your head really bleeds a lot. And then he got cut in a different spot. I've had guys get their eardrums punctured. You know, what's really tough is bloody noses, because with a cut, you can see where the cut is and where you got to put pressure and topically apply your cut man medicine. If somebody gets cut inside the nose, you can't exactly tell where it's coming from. You know, is it on the inside flap? Is it on the outside? Is it very deep because they got a nose injury and it's bleeding just because there's structural damage, you know, to the nasal cavity? So you got to kind of play, you got to kind of feel that around. And here's the other fighters coming back and they're tired. The last thing they want to do is fill a swab up their nose while they're trying to breathe. It's like, you know, getting another COVID test. And we know nobody wants to do that. So those are the tricky things, because I've had sometimes more trouble stopping cuts to the nose, and only to find out later that the guy sustained an injury in training. And there was nothing you're going to be able to do to stop that blood once it gets hit. The other one is mouth injuries to the lips. There's really not a whole lot you can do. It's not like you're putting cut medicine in the guy's mouth. You know, you can apply a little bit of pressure, maybe a little bit of ice, but hey, guess what? In 20 seconds, what's going to happen? You're going to go out there and get hit again, and you're going to start all over. It's like Groundhog Day.
Would you say that you're still learning the trade, Mike? And where do you learn from? Do you go on to like YouTube? Do you learn from other cut men?
You know, I learned from some of the greatest cut men that ever lived. Fitz Duran was my boxing coach in the Air Force. Guy I ever taught cuts was legendary trainer and cutman David Martinez, who worked with many fighters, Shane Mosley and Miguel Cotto. But I have to say the one that had the biggest influence on me was Joe Chavez. Joe Chavez from East L.A. He did Oscar De La Hoya, Miguel Cotto. I got to know Joe in his later years. God rest his soul, he passed away. And he's the one that really took the most time. I had a lot of conversations with him. Obviously, me and Stitch have had a lot of conversations, and I've been able to talk to a lot of my contemporaries, Russ Amber, Rudy Hernandez, Mike Basil, Danny Milano, guys like that. But I'm going to tell you guys a story. I run the homicide school for the whole state of California. It's a two-week school. Today was day one of a new homicide school, and I have detectives from all over Southern California, Nevada. And I'm having the detectives introduce themselves, and one of the detectives, when I'm telling them about myself, I tell them I work in the fight business. So this female detective comes to me, and she says, you know, my grandfather was a boxing cut man, and he worked with a lot of top guys. Who was your grandfather? And I get goosebumps. And it says her grandfather was Joe Chavez.
Wow.
And I'm like, hit me. I think because every article that's ever been written about, every podcast I've ever done, I always mention Joe Chavez. I always mention Joe Chavez. And now his granddaughter is in my homicide school. So she tells me a story that her grandmother, who's still alive, Virginia, and her grandfather, Joe, used to always mention that there was another cut man that he was a detective. But they didn't really know like where I worked and the assignment I have. And she looked at me and she said, now I know you were the detective they used to talk about. So we took a picture and I said, please send this to your grandmother. And she just sent me a message a little bit that, yeah, my grandmother remembers you and you talking to my grandpa for hours. It was just like, out of all the things that I could have done in this world and all the things that could have happened today, after this weekend, Joe Chavez's granddaughter, she's a grown woman. It's not like she's a teenager. I'm not going to say her age, but she might be in her late 30s. She's in my homicide school. I mean, just talk about the circle of life and how things kind of come full circle. What is better than that? Then I shared some stories with her about her grandfather, because obviously she knew her grandfather in a different way than I knew him. So I go on FaceTime with Cutman Mike Basil. Mike works with a lot of guys. And I go on FaceTime. I go, Mike, who's your all-time favorite Cutman, old school guy? Without prompt, I go, who was always really good to you? Joe Chavez. And I turn the phone around. And I said, this is his granddaughter. Say hello. And it was just really, 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 really cool. I mean, my blessings this week and the last few days have gone beyond just, you know, Dimitri Bivol, you know, beating Canelo over it. I just thought I'd share that.
Small world, Mike.
Yeah, and it just, I mean, it's just, I thought so highly of Joe, and he always took the time to talk to me, and not just about boxing, but just about life. And I was fortunate that where I live was close to my office, and Joe used to sell tape and gauze and buckets. And one day I must have went over there like twice every week for like a month. And finally he looked at me, Mike, do you need all these goddamn buckets? And I said, no, Joe, I just want to talk to you. And we just started talking, and we became very friendly.
That's awesome. That's definitely a great story. Like Mike, like we were saying, you know, what a small world that we live in. As big as it is, it's always smaller when moments like that happen.
Same thing. It's a big world, but the boxing community, man, is, we can all mess and fight with each other, man, but I guess what? Hopefully we'd all jump in a pit full of rattlesnakes for each other, and that's the way it is.
So in terms of Bivol, like, you know, let's just say that halfway through the fight, six rounds, what was the feeling in the corner right there for you guys?
Keep backing Canelo up. Don't show him any respect. Let him know that you're the champion, and tell him. Obviously, we respect Canelo. He respects Canelo, but they're in battle at this point. Back him up. Keep using your jab. Show no respect. Basically saying you're the boss. And Dimitri several times would sit there and say, no respect. His breathing was fine. You know, making sure that he was cool, hydrated, giving him the proper instructions with Gennady, his Russian trainer, and Joel were doing. If I saw something, I would point it out usually to Joel, and then he would pass it along. Joel and I have a great trust and a great working relationship. But Dimitri, like I said earlier, he has high pedigree, he has high character. This isn't his first rodeo. He's been a world champion for 5 years. Once he got in the flow of the fight, he was doing his thing. You know, he was, and can believe me, Canelo was trying to knock his freaking block off. And you saw his arm, you know, Dimitri's arm. But I think the jab was the difference, and the fact that sometimes in life, like maybe your guys' second honeymoon, size matters, right? You know, for better or for worse, size matters. And if you don't have the size, man, you better hope you got a good personality, man.
Right. You gotta sell it somehow.
gotta be a good cuddler, or you gotta pretend like you listen, you know, but size matters. And I think that was one of the, not the only, but that was a factor that Dimitri Bivol's in his prime, and you know, he's a legitimate light heavyweight, and he's a world champion for a reason, not by accident.
Now Mike, was there anything in the corner? Because obviously, you know, as boxing fans, or even just any type of fan who watches a combat sport, especially boxing, the camera's always in the corner on both sides, and then it's like filming the trainer or the cut man, you know, talking to their fighter. And a lot of people like seeing that, the interactions in the corner before they come back out for the next round. On the broadcast, there was a lot of commercials in between the rounds, so we didn't really get exposed to that. Was there anything, any Easter eggs that maybe we might have missed?
No, I mean, other than the fact that our corner was very calm, because obviously things were going, you know, our way, and Dimitri was executing exactly what the game plan was and exactly what he was being told to do. There wasn't any major facial traumas. You know, there's a couple times I decided, you know, to put the end swell, just to, if I see little pockets of something like that may flare up, so that doesn't become a problem later on. But the main thing was, you know, letting him breathe and just letting him absorb what was being told to him by the trainers, and him processing, you know, all the things that, you know, from the next, getting ready for the next round, and just sticking to the game plan. We're basically telling those same things, man. Keep using that jab, keep backing him up, and don't show him any respect. And showing him any respect, like I said, obviously, just because they're in combat mode at that time. You know, we're trying to beat a great champion.
So I saw you in the background, I believe, when, I don't know if they were interviewing Canelo in the ring or something, but you were right smack dab in the middle of the camera, right? I think it was right behind him. Say that again.
Yeah, that's when Dimitri was getting interviewed. You know, I was allowed access to the ring, so I was kind of wandering around. I had a couple of moments, different times, where I talked to Canelo and Eddie, and, you know, sent my well wishes and, you know, and respect to them. But it was pretty cool, and we were just kind of basking in the moment. Those kind of moments, you know, they come around, but they don't come around as often as you'd like.
When you guys got back to the locker room, you know, maybe there's just no cameras for the couple minutes or what have you, were you able to talk to Dimitri, and what did he tell you?
We just hugged, man. There was a lot of hugging going on, a lot of just pure joy. I mean, there was probably 30 of us, you know, in the locker room, and everybody's just hugging each other. It wasn't just one person talking to Dimitri. It's like, it takes a village, man. And there's a lot of work went into this by a lot of people, not just on fight night, but for months and for years. And I think it was just a rejoice. And, you know, I got a chance, me and Joel hugged, you know, his wife was in there, and Taylor Ramsdale, and, you know, and Gennady, his trainer, and Vadim, and Oleg, and Alex, and other people part of their team. It was just one of those moments where you look at an NBA locker room after they win the title, and that's just kind of how it was. Everybody kind of bouncing off of each other, man. And obviously Dimitri was a star of that show, and we all started taking pictures, you know, with his belts, and he was very accommodating to that. And I just told him how proud I am. And I just said, let's just keep it rolling. Enjoy it tonight, man, but let's just keep it rolling.
How did you and Joel celebrate? What bottle did he crack open for this victory?
You know, it's funny because afterward you got the press conference, right? You have a press conference, and I'm going to say this. My girlfriend, when she got to the arena, they made her lock up her purse in some storage thing outside the arena. So when I went out there to say, hey, let's go celebrate, she's like, there's 500 people here trying to get their wallets and purse. And it took an hour and a half to get her purse.
Oh, man.
And by that time, it was already midnight. And I go, these freaking ineffective, inefficient people running this locker storage thing. I mean, it was literally, you could not have been more inefficient. Could not have been more inefficient than these people. They were literally pulled. There was nothing. It's not like you walked up and you said, here's my number. Oh, here's your stuff. No, it wasn't like that at all. Picture the worst possible scenario. She was at the front of the line of about 500 people, and she was one of the last person to get her belongings. So it's safe. I wasn't at that particular moment. I wasn't in the greatest mood. It's kind of like, you know, something's going on and there's going to be a huge celebration, but you can't be a part of it as much as you wanted it, because I wasn't going to leave her there. We just went back, had some dinner. By the time those guys got back from the press conference, you know, and they do the drug testing, it's late. And I think at that particular time, people start getting, I'm not a huge partier. I'm not a drinker. So really at that particular time, man, I just wanted to get something really, really good to eat. And I'll be honest, I saw Joel later on, and I saw his wife, because the room is close to ours, and just gave him a hug, man. I said, I love you. You know, I know a lot of the reason I was there was with that team was because of Joel. He always advocates for me, and you know, we exchanged some messages the next day. But, you know, we're pros, because Joel texts me this morning, Mike, I'm back in the gym, a lot of work to do, you know. Like Freddie, same thing, man. He wins a world title with Manny Pacquiao, and guess what? He's there back a wild card the next day, man. And that's just kind of how we roll. It's like we act like we've done this before, and let's start getting ready to do it again. But you know, there's a lot of self satisfaction for myself. Sometimes we all just need that kind of that moment where we just kind of take a deep breath and just kind of appreciate the moment. And really, it was Dimitri's moment. It was Dimitri's moment. And I think that's, I respect him that much. And I think that much of him and his team. But yeah, I was very blessed and fortunate to play a part in that. But he did the heavy lifting, man, and all the accolades he definitely deserves, and all the respect. And it's the same with Canelo, man. That's what we want in boxing, right? We want great fight each other. We want guys to challenge each other. Imagine if Sugar Ray Leonard would have lost to Roberto Duran and never wanted to fight another tough fight in his life. Imagine Roberto Duran, when he got knocked out by Tommy Hearns, decided he wasn't going to fight, you know, Marvin Hagler and Iran Barkley and Wilfred Benitez. And, you know, it's just great fighters challenge themselves. You know, people talk a lot of crap about Oscar De La Hoya, man, but, you know, he fought everybody. I remember there might have been one calendar year where he fought Shane Mosley, Yoribor Campos, Fernando Vargas, and Felix Trinidad, like in a 17-month span. That's unheard of. Great fighters. You got to challenge yourself. I look at my friend Buddy McGirt. I mean, he fought Meldrick Taylor, Pernell Whitaker. You know, I mean, those are just great fighters. And I want to see more of that. I want to see, you know, guys challenge themselves. Win, lose, or draw. That's where you build your legacy. Tommy Hearn lost the two biggest fights of his life. Is he still considered a great fighter? Hell yes. You know, imagine if people started downplaying Emmanuel Stewart. Well, with Tommy Hearns, he lost his two biggest fights. Does that mean Emmanuel Stewart wasn't one of the greatest trainers ever? Absolutely not. You know, as much success as Freddie's had, and he's had dozens and dozens of world champions, every great trainer loses their fighters lose fights. Does it make him not great? No, Freddie Roach is one of the three or four best trainers that ever lived. And if he's not at the top of the list, you know, he's right there near the top.
Mike, if we retired you today, where would this stand in your greatest moments? And just give us your top three and why.
Oh, my God. I'm going to give you my top three. Obviously, working with Manny Pacquiao, the only eight-division world champion, being part of that history and that legacy, that's something they can never take away. The fact that I was able to do it with Freddie, guys like Marvin. When Julian Williams beat Jared Hurd, and nobody thought we could do it. And Julian won that night. And it's funny that the three fights that I'm mentioning is the following Monday I came with you guys. No coincidence, right?
Never a coincidence. Not with us.
With Julian and the bread man, Steven Edwards. That fight with Jared Hurd, the fact that we had lost to Charlo a couple years before, and we went into Hurd's hometown, and we did that, and we was really us against the world. And this one with Dimitri beating, my gosh, Canelo Alves. So to be part of history with Manny Pacquiao, and to be part of history with Bivol beating Canelo, and because of my closeness with Julian Williams and Steven Edwards, I want to say that those were my three. And I've had some other moments, and I'm leaving some out. But if you're going to ask me the question about my top three, those are the top three. And what made it the most special is not just the fight itself, but the people that I got to share that experience with. That's what's going to be lasting. When a Mike Rodriguez retires from boxing and I'm some old guy in a nursing home, nobody's ever going to care how much money I made in boxing. I hope not. I hope the purse bid guy, the pay-per-view guy on Twitter or whatever, I hope they're not talking about cut man pay guy. You know what I mean? They're going to thing, and it's like fighters, man. You chase your legacy, and I want people to remember that I worked with these great champions, and I'm up to world champion, I think number 20 or 21. And I'm pretty proud of that, but not just because I worked with those world champions, but them as people and the people that I got to do it. And I think that's what's the most meaningful for me at this point in my life. I'm 56. I've been blessed beyond, the Almighty God has blessed me in so many ways. I know I got more behind me than I got in front of me. And I just want to savor those moments because it's people that you share things with that mean the most. My son Andrew's a cut man. He's worked the world title fights with me. He worked with some of my fighters. What's better than doing what you love with the ones you love most? Nothing. Nothing's better than that. And I'm blessed to have these tentacles of family and fight camps and friends that go beyond just boxing. Like my relationship with Freddie Roach and Maria Wildcard and Marvin. Marvin Zamudio, he's worked so many fights with Freddie with world champions. He got his first world champion with Stan Jonas, right? And I got to be there with him. And I had to go against Joel and Vadim and the managers with Budiev because I was with Budiev when he beat Jamal James. So I had to go, you know, and so it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes your guys are going to fight. They didn't hold it against me. They still hired me to work with Dimitri. Everybody's a pro, and it's the personal relationships, you know, that you do have. And that's, I know I go back to it, but that's what means the most to me, sharing those moments that they can never take away from you.
How did Bivol celebrate the win after Saturday night?
Well, I don't know, man, because I was stuck in the T-Mobile out there in front waiting for a purse and personal belongings I thought they were going to lose their purse, man. And I don't tell her this, but I was this close to saying, hey, I'll just meet you back at the hotel, man. I'm going to go. Go enjoy this celebration. I hope they find your purse, but I know I was never going to hear the end of that. And I was a good soldier to the end. So I hope that's appreciated someday when I do something stupid and, you know, I get yelled at or something. But those are the kind of things that I'll remember about that night. Like, what did you guys do after that break? Did you go to Disneyland? Did you party? What did you do? You're in Vegas. I said, no, I waited for 2 hours for somebody's purse to get out of some locker. Worker there that couldn't find the purse, man. So that's actually what I'm going to remember.
Like, one thing I don't think we've ever touched on, you're either, is it the creator or the owner of War Tape?
I'm one of the partners with War Tape with Kai and Will Vittori, the brothers. When you see the War Tape with the VB on there, we've co-branded now with the WBC. If you notice, it was a great night for War Tape. Canelo Alvarez and Eddie Reynoso always rap with War Tape. They used our WBC co-brand, WBC War Tape, and Dimitri used regular War Tape. So it was like a win-win. Katie Taylor, last week, I had a chance to chat with Katie at ringside real quick and thanked her because she always wears War Tape. Errol Spence, you know, the Charlos, all of Robert Garcia's fighters, all of Joel Diaz's fighters. It's really easier for me to name the fighters that don't use War Tape than the fighters that do, because we have hundreds, a lot of UFC, Bellator champions all use War Tape. And I always tell people, first it was an evolution and now it's a revolution.
So how did you see something you didn't like in the tape that was already being produced and you decided to make your own? Is that?
you know, the two brothers that started off with a great product, they just didn't know, they didn't have that many inroads in boxing, and a family member of mine happened to know them. And I just kind of partnered with them and built that relationship the last 11 years. And we've tweaked some things, and we have a really good product. I don't ever put down anybody else's product, but we're the original branded tape and combat sports. There's a lot of copycats. I'm not going to say copycats now. There's a lot of other brands, and I don't even focus on them. I focus on what the positive things that we're doing. Freddie once told me, Eddie Reynoso, Robert Garcia, that as much as our relationship is good and as much they like the way the tape looks, it's the fact that when their fighter takes it out of the glove after the fight, their wrap looks the same, and it protects a fighter's hand. And what's the biggest asset that a fighter has? His hand. And I just think we just take tremendous pride in providing a product that is superior. And we're going to continue to do that. And I'm blessed to be part of that. And having another thing that I do in the fight game that I can personally see sometimes. I'm not Katie Taylor's pet man or a trainer, but being responsible for making sure that her hands are wrapped with war tape that night, and that she loves it, you know, and she has faith in our product. The same with, you know, guys like Errol Spence and all the other names, you know, that I mentioned. It's very satisfying, and I'm really enjoying. I'm going to knock on wood here because, you know, life has a funny way of humbling you, and I try not to get too high and I try not to get too low, but more or less just count the blessings that I have and that I've been afforded, and to pass those blessings along to whoever I can.
Like, with how popular and how busy you are in boxing, have you, I think I'm right in saying you just do boxing, you don't go over to MMA and work in the UFC, and have you had the chance?
I've never worked in the UFC, but I've worked Bellator, I worked Strikeforce, I worked Elite XC. I used to do a lot of MMA. But once my boxing clientele, in MMA, you work for the promoter. In boxing, except for COVID, you work for the fighter. And I got about 55 fighters right now worldwide. Some of them drop off. I just had a fighter tonight. I just found out I'm not going to be working with him anymore. It kind of dropped off, but it was kind of one of those things where I kind of saw the writing on the wall and dynamics change, and people kind of change in the sport sometimes. And I don't begrudge them, you know, it happens. But I always know there's another opportunity that's going to come, and I just look forward to those other opportunities.
Mike, how different is it and how difficult is it when you do, like you just said, in MMA, you normally just work a corner. So they're like, hey, Mike, you're working the red corner. You don't know the fighter. Yeah. You don't know, like, if he has problems with his nose, if he has certain cuts and stuff like that. How difficult is that for you?
It is, and I did that during the pandemic because I did all the Fox and Showtime cards for PBC. And a lot of the guys I had worked with, trainers, but there were guys who were coming out to fight, and I was like, I knew nothing about them. And because of COVID, it's not like I could spend time with them. We were in the bubble, so I didn't get to hang out with them at the weigh-in, you know, the fight week. Some of these guys were just showing up in the ring. Hey, you're in the blue corner. Thank God I was in the blue corner. But during that time, I worked with Anthony Durrell, and I worked with Anthony a little bit. But he fought one of my main guys, Teron Davis, trained by Steven Edwards. And the promoter says, Mike, you are going to be in the, like, well, Teron's my regular fighter in the red corner. Mike, you're going to be in the blue corner. So I had to work a couple of my own fighters. I did that with Mark Magsaya, with Freddie Roach. I didn't have a choice because during the protocols and the COVID times and the bubbles, they told me where I was going to work. Thank God I was able to keep those fighters. You saw what Mark did against Gary Russell. Teron Davis had a great fight against the fetus. He showed a lot of heart, and it's just boxing, man. You got, it's fluid, it's ever changing, and you just got to be flexible with it.
Mike, going back to Bill for a second, coming off of this win, the biggest of his career, you know, Canelo, and you know, I think Eddie Hearn has already acknowledged and confirmed that there was a rematch clause, and Canelo seems like he's leaning towards it. But then Dimitri Bivol's also said that he's willing to go down to 168 and challenge Canelo for all his titles at 168. You as a fan, not that you're speaking for Dimitri, but you as a fan, what would you like to see?
Man, sign me up for that. I mean, what would be better than if he went down, if he could make the weight, you know, and go for those, you know, and go for all those belts. I mean, as a fan, Why not? I mean, I want great fighters to fight each other, whether they're my guys or not my guys. I mean, I'll ask you the same question. Would you be interested in that fight at 68 for all the belts? I know I would.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting that it's Dmitry Bivol for a couple of years now has always made his intentions known that he was willing to go down to 168 for the Canelo fight. But Canelo came up to his weight, to Dmitry's natural weight. Now that Canelo went up, if Dmitry's willing to go down to Canelo's more natural weight, why not?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's like anything else, man, if the price is right, why not? I mean, I would love to see that. I mean, they're both fighters have, you know, very smart people behind them that, you know, I'm very confident they're going to make the right decision. And if that does transpire, man, I'm all for that.
Mike, do you think that Dmitry before Canelo gave him this opportunity and they were able to have the fight this past Saturday, it's obviously known to the hardcore boxing fan base that Dmitry Bivol had a difficult time getting the bigger names and the champions in the ring with him because he was dangerous, right? And you know, the marketing behind him wasn't as strong as others. But now, coming off of a win as significant as this against Canelo Alvarez, even if there is a rematch or not, do those names come out of the shadows now and give Dmitry Bivol a shot at them?
Yeah, but I think it's more too, though, but he's kind of in the driver's seat too. I think he can kind of steer that ship now. And I think people now recognize that he's a big fish in the pond. And, you know, and he's going to draw significant interest now. It's kind of like, I don't want to compare it because I don't even compare the two fighters, but when Andy Ruiz beat Anthony Joshua, you know what I mean? There was a huge buzz. Unfortunately, with Andy, he wasn't able to do the right things with that. Dmitry's a completely different animal. I'm only talking about this just as in the buzz and in the interest now. You know, Dmitry Bivol has a whole country and, you know, all of, you know, Europe and Eastern Europe. And, you know, he's a name now in the United States. I mean, he beat Canelo Alvarez. And I think the possibilities are endless. And I think once the smoke clears and people have a chance to enjoy this, they're going to get back to work and say, hey, you know what? What's going to be our next move? And, you know, in life, man, you want to strike while that iron's hot. And I think the smart people behind him, you know, will make a great decision for Dmitry. And he's going to be a really tough out for a long time.
What do you think about a possible matchup? Because, like I said, if Dmitry Bivol is willing to go down to 168, and he says it with confidence, like he can make the weight easily, and it looks like he can. If he's willing to go down to 168, what do you think about a potential matchup with David Benavidez?
I think right now, in my opinion, if he's going to go down to 68, if you're going to do that, wouldn't you rather go for the belts? The guy that's the undisputed champion.
Oh, right, right.
He's really,
yeah, absolutely. But I mean, just like, let's just say he beats Canelo.
Yeah, oh, that would be David Benavidez. I've been wanting to see Benavidez fight Canelo. I'm a huge David Benavidez fan. I've known David and his dad and his brother for many, many years. I'm a huge fan of his. I love the way he fights. He comes to fight. I mean, I got to see it firsthand when Caron Davis, even though he wasn't a full 68er, you know, got to fight David in Phoenix there. I'm all for make the best fighters fighting each other, whether promotional alliances and belts. Let's just make the best fights because it's only good for you. Saw what happened this last week, and it was great to be in Vegas. You know, besides me having to wait, you know, for some personable soccer, you know, ruining out on my shine, you know, in my celebration. But hey, that's life, man. Life has a way of humbling you, man. Don't get too high because, you know, something's going to always, but hey, you know,
that's exactly what it was. They humbled you at that moment, right?
But think about this. If Dmitry does decide to go down, and, you know, obviously he'll make the right, him and his folks will make the right decision. You got Canelo at 68, you know, Charlo can come up. You got Benavidez, you know, Caleb Plant still down. There's just a lot of action. You got Triple G. I mean, there's just a lot of action, man. And I think that's just what we all want, is we want a lot of action, a lot of smoke.
Definitely.
You remember in the old, well, you had Icorte and De La Hoya and Vargas and Trinidad and Mosley and Mayorga and Vernon Forrest. that was a pretty good era. And then you go back even more, and you had Lloyd Hunnigan and Donald Curry and, you know, Mark Whelan. And then you go back even more and you had Leonard Duran and Benitez, and, you know, Hearns. I mean, just great eras make for great fights. And that's what I want to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Mike, you know, we appreciate it. You know, you're one of the, every time we talk about different people in boxing, we always have to bring up your name. You're literally one of the most busiest guys in the sport. Not only in the sport, but I think in life in general, you know, with your day job, and then you got your job as a professional cut man. You're literally one of the busiest people in the world, I would argue. You know, are you working any corners this upcoming weekend on the Castaño Charlo card, on the Zurdo Ramirez card, the Triller card?
Yeah, with the PBC card on the Charlo Castaño card, I'm going to be with Jerron Boots Ennis, who I'm just a huge fan. I think he's already a great fighter, and he's going to be a generational fighter. And then I got some other things coming up. I'm still trying to confirm some things, and you know, the summer is always really busy. Mark Magsayo is going to fight Ray Vargas in July, I believe, in San Antonio. And I love Mark and his wife, Frances, and the whole Wildcard family. And I just love being a part of that team. Elvis Rodriguez. I got Joey Spencer probably coming up, and I know I'm missing the name of some of the people that I should be mentioning. But everything's going to start falling into place for the rest of the summer. And I'm looking forward to being super busy, but I'm going to cherish this one for a couple more days. And then this Saturday with Boots, I'm going to get back to work.
How long, Mike, one more question. How long before your son takes over the reins completely?
Oh, you know what? He's already worked world title fights. He's 33, so there's no training wheels on him anymore. He's already stopped, you know, cuts in major fights. And it's just a matter of getting more opportunities. Hopefully, I still got a few good years left. Sergey Lipinets is going to be making his comeback at 140. Andrew and I both worked the corner, so they've already hired us both to work the corner. Because through his title, moving up and winning the title and fighting Marky Garcia, we both had that. Andrew works to Scott Niambar. He's the primary cut man. I'm actually his assistant. So, and then he works with several of the fighters out of Wildcard, some of the younger guys coming up, starting to develop, you know, that team chemistry. And he's worked with trainer Henry Zamora, Sosa in New York, Danny Zamora. So he's worked with a lot of different trainers now. Herman Casiedos, worked with Herman's fighters a couple of times. So they all like his work, and hopefully it's a good reflection of me and you know, always being able to be counted on. So it's, like I said, what's better than doing what you love with the ones you love most? The only thing I would change about this weekend was that them getting that purse out of that. But that's a hope for a different day. But honestly, guys, I love chatting with you guys. You guys ask great questions. You mentioned that I was busy, and yeah, I am. But when you love to do the things that I get to do in this life, I do them because I choose to do them. So sometimes I'm very blessed, and I'm very fortunate that I get to do the things in life that I love to do. And there's nothing better than that. I'm very humbled, and
absolutely, absolutely. What a good way to end this episode on that note. You know, we obviously appreciate your valuable time. You've been on here multiple times. You're one of our more recurring guests here on the Last Round Podcast. So we always appreciate your valuable time, Mike. Before we let you go ahead and plug everything you got. War Tape, social media, all the fights you got coming up. Go ahead.
I just want to thank you guys for having me on. And since when we talked about my three most significant fights that I can remember, the J-Rock fight with Herb, Pacquiao with Thurman, and now Bivol Canelo, I had scheduled with you guys the following Monday. So let's schedule, you know, maybe July 11th, you know, the Monday after Mark Dial for Barcelona. Let's pencil that in, and we'll go from there and see if we can go 4-for-4. What do they call the hat trick? And then the 4-1 is called the golden sombrero. Let's go, yeah, for that.
Let's do it. Definitely. Definitely. And if you guys are listening, obviously you can follow Mike at Boxer Rods, right? That's BOXERRODZ.
Yes, yeah, we see it at the end. Boxer Rods on Twitter and Instagram, and I always love to listen to good, impartial, educated opinions. And let's stay away from all the trolling and all that stuff. And just, I'm here for it all. But I want to thank you guys again, man. I'm a fan of your show, and anything I can ever do to help you out, don't ever hesitate.
We appreciate it, Mike. Thank you so much, and we'll see you. We'll see you at the fight.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.